Welcome to Spider on the Web 22, and my holiday pledge to you is no friggin' Christmas music. That's right, friends. This will be a carol-free zone for the duration of the holidays. And to help drive home that point, here's a track from the new album To the Pouring Rain by Seth Augustus of San Francisco, a Tuvan-inspired blues called Slim Sam. That's my kind of Christmas music. The first time I heard the album To the Pouring Rain, I sat down and wrote to Seth the following words. Seth, you beautiful madman, you recombine bits of DNA from Captain Beefheart, Tom Waits, Paul Penna, John Coltrane, Bob Dylan, Howlin' Wolf, Spider John Kerner, and John Cage, wrapped up in strands of RNA from Brother Theodore, Charles Bukowski, J.P. Donlevy, Allen Ginsberg, Lord Buckley, Chagyam Trungpa, The Amazing Spider-Man, Robert Anton Wilson, and Tom Robbins. Paul would be so proud of you. You've taken his flag and planted it right on the mountainside, then planted your own right beside it. If he were still here, this CD would have him taking his axe out of his case to jam with you. I love every track, cousin. This is the music God hears in his sleep when he has a high fever. Keep it coming. You'll find that review quoted along with a lot of amazing stuff at www.sethaugustus.com. a really cool website, which Seth designed himself, by the way. And, by the way, if you happen to be hearing this the day it comes out on Friday and you happen to be in the city of San Francisco, you might want to fall by 22nd and Bartlett and catch Seth himself at the Revolution Cafe from 9 to midnight with drummer Dave Mahaly and bassist Bill Nordker. It'll be an amazing show. All right, this is the Christmas podcast. There's no planning, there's no organization, there's no theme, there's no through line. It's just going to be a whole bunch of music strung together with occasional anecdotes and other bits of information. The Paul that I referred to earlier in reviewing Seth's album was Paul Penna, the late great blues man who penned Steve Miller's hit "The Jet Airliner." How I first became aware of Paul is through my interest in Richard Feynman. The great physicist Feynman, toward the end of his life, developed an obsessive desire to visit a place called Tuva, around the other side of the planet. In fact, if you were to take a map of Asia and balance it on a pin, the pin would be sticking in Tuva. Feynman, great as he was, never managed to get to Tuva because it was at that time in the middle of something called a Soviet Union. And if you don't know what that means, it's a long story. Feynman died before it was possible to visit Tuva, and within a few years of his death, just about anybody could go there that could afford a ticket. Anyway, my interest in Feynman led me to Tuva. Tuva led me to mention of a documentary that had been nominated for an Oscar and damn well should have won, called Genghis Blues. First, just to set the stage a little, let me play you some of Paul's blues. This is Paul Penna with the classic Robert Johnson song Terraplane Blues.
I feel so lonesome. Do you hear me weep and moan? I feel so lonesome. Do you hear me weep and moan? We've been driving my airplane now for years since I've been gone. I crashed my light bulb. Lord, your horn wouldn't even blow. Flash my lights, my mug. Lord, your horn won't even blow. You got a shortness connection, but it's way down and low. I'm gonna hash your hood, mama. Lord, I'm about to check your oil. Said I'm gonna hash your hood, mama. I'm about to check your oil. Got a woman that I'm loving. She's way down in Arkansas. Oh, when your car ain't even buzzing, your generator won't get the spark. Always in a bag ignition. You got to have your battery charged. I'm crying, please. I said, please don't do me wrong. Who been driving my airplane? You since I've been gone, gone, gone. Give me fire.
As you can hear, Paul was the real deal. Now, one day he's sitting around his apartment in San Francisco. He's not doing too good. Paul, you got to understand, is stone blind. His wife, best friend, and musical partner has been dead for about 3 years. He's sitting around the flat, and like a lot of blind and handicapped folks, he finds himself listening a lot to the shortwave. One day, a sound comes out of the speakers that just fries him where he sits. It is the sound of Tuvan throat singing, and I'm going to let Paul himself tell you the story.
All right, this is a little song called the Cargaramon. And I want to do this little tune for such people as Charlie Patton, Howlin' Wolf, Tommy McLennan, and all the real gut bucket scratchy blues singers that helped me to get where I am today. One of the first people that I played with was a man by the name of Sir John Lee Hooker. So I'd like to do this little song, especially the guitar part, in the style of John Lee. This is for you. John Lee Hooker, the big bad cooker. My wife died, went on that long black train. 3 years since then, you've come and gone again. Had to find some way to soothe my soul. That's when I found that gotta get out my own. Gotta get out my own. Gotta get out my own. Walked on in to a little record store. They had something for tuba that I wanted, don't you know. By the time I met Chadana Congoro, knew how to do that. Can't get a moan. 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 Now I'm gone on my way of life. Sometimes you get in trouble, sometimes you have some strife. Some days it seems so bad, people feel like you're all alone. That's when you wanna moan that. Gotta get out moan. Gotta get out moan. Gotta get out moan. Gotta get out moan.
At the end kind of gives the story away a little, but basically here's how it goes. Paul clearly teaches himself Tuvan throat singing, at least Cargira style, And then one day he reads in the paper that a Tuvan throat singer named Kangarol Andar is coming to town. So he makes it his business to fall by. He digs Kangarol Andar. He's blown away. Afterwards, at the intermission, he comes up to him, and he just cuts loose with one of those whoa deals. And Kangar is blown across the room, flips out, just loves it, names him on the spot Cher Shimjer, which is Tuvan for earthquake, and says to him, I'm bringing you back to Tuva with me. You got to compete in the World Tuvan Throat Singing Championship. See the documentary Genghis Blues. It will tell you the whole story of how Paul went to Kizil, the capital of Tuva. That, by the way, is why Feynman wanted to visit Tuva, is because he heard the capital was called Kizil, K-Y-Z-Y-L, and he thought any place with a capital named Kizil had to be really cool. Paul traveled to Kizil, took part in the international Tuvan throat singing competition, and he won the sucker. It's a wonderful story. It's a beautiful documentary, and I'm just going to give you one more quick track from its soundtrack. This is Paul and Kangarol, so you can hear a different style of Tuvan throat singing along with his.
Yeah. I was laughing and listening, doing my thing for 5 long years, and then keep on looking for someone to tell me just how to sing like him. Couldn't find it.
What you talking about?
Oh, mate,
what you talking about?
Something.
What you talking about?
Things so they can hear just yeah again.
Seeing that documentary turned me on to a lot of great Tuvan music, in particular a group called Trigilchen, who toured the U.S. recently. I have a live recording of them in New Jersey. I won't play for you because I think you've had enough Tuvan for one night. There's also an amazing cat named Ojupa Vladimir Oyun, O-I-U-N, with an astonishing album called Divine Music from a Jail. Apparently, Oyun spent most of his life in a Soviet prison, and his album is dedicated to one of his jailers. You can find out about this and all kinds of other wonderful things Tuvan at a site called www.fotuva.org. Fotuva, that stands for Friends of Tuva, a group formed by friends and disciples of the great Richard Feynman, just in honor of his preoccupations with Tuva, I guess. Anyway, I wish I could tell you that the Paul Penna story had a happy ending. Sadly, it does not. He was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. Pancreatic cancer is always fatal, usually within 3 months. It's what got Jeff Raskin, the guy who invented the Macintosh. Because Paul was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, they said to him, well, you know, the good news is now it doesn't matter what kind of painkillers we give you. So they gave him everything in the pharmacopoeia, and it basically got him heavily addicted. And then discovered when he wasn't dead 3 months later that they had made a small mistake. He didn't have pancreatic cancer. He had pancreatitis, a completely different thing. Wonderful news, you're going to live for a while longer. We forgot to mention, by the way, you're going cold turkey right now. Kaboom! Paul's last days were not happy ones. Seth Augustus was one of his principal caregivers. during those unhappy days. That's how I came to meet Seth, and through my correspondence with him, I had the remarkable privilege of spending an hour and a half on the phone with Paul Penna very shortly before he died. It was one of the most remarkable, wacky, and wonderful conversations I've ever had. It went all over the place. Paul was kind of really scattered by then, but at least I got the chance to tell him how much his music and beyond that, his courage, his audacity, and his struggle had meant to me. Just before he checked out on October 2nd, 2005. Go to www.paulpenna.com. There'll be more information, and you'll find a nice write-up on him on www.fotuva.org that I mentioned earlier. Now for something completely different. Let me tell you about John Walker and Zenf Studios. I met John at one of Moses Neimer's famous Idea City talk fest in Toronto a couple years back. He did a presentation shortly before my own, and it just blew my doors off. I'm just going to let this explain itself. Here is a brief 1 minute by a famous Swiss pianist named Alfred Cortot. Cortot is widely known for his poetic insight into Romantic period piano works, particularly those of Chopin, and here we're going to hear him play just 1 minute of Prelude No. 3 in G major in mono. It will become immediately clear that Mr. Cortot died in 1962. The quality of the recording will make that clear. Here is Alfred Cortot and Chopin Prelude 3 in G minor. The man's got an incredible touch, but clearly that was recorded back in the Stone Age. Now, here's that identical track after John Walker gets through with it. Well, there will be a brief pause while you put your socks back on, put your eyeballs back in their sockets. That's clearly an amazing job of upcleaning. But that's not what it is, really. It's not upcleaning. It's something different. It's called reperformance. What Zenf does is take an original recording and convert it into a MIDI document, which ignores the nature of the instrument itself and captures only the precise nature of the performance. And then they use that MIDI document to instruct a modern Yamaha Synclavier piano. In essence, you're bringing the original artist back from the dead to play it all over again, but for better recording equipment on a better piano. One of Amazon.com's music editors has just named Zenf Studios' re-performance of Glenn Gould's Goldberg Variations as the best classical music album of the year. Without bothering with the A-side comparison this time, because I'm sure you can imagine it for yourself. Here's a little taste of what Zenf did with the Goldberg Variations by Glenn Gould, and when it's over, you tell me what's the most striking thing about it. clip is enough to give you the idea, and if you want to argue that the most striking thing about it is the astonishing quality of the recording, I won't argue, but some would say the most astonishing thing is that it's probably the only recording in existence of Glenn Gould without muttering in the background. Gould had a tendency to mumble while he played, just like Oscar Peterson. You tell me, is it an improvement on the performance or not to shut the man up for a change? Myself, I think it improves it. Others may differ. Here's one, however, on which I don't think there's any possible disagreement. Here's Art Tatum playing at a party. This was recorded in 1955 in mono, and what you're going to hear is first about 30 seconds of the original, and then the whole thing as Zenfeed. How wonderful that that song's title so aptly describes it. Too marvelous for words. One of Tatum's most legendary albums was a plate called Piano Starts Here. Once again, its title was literally accurate. It was recorded by Tatum in a place called the Shrine Auditorium in Los Angeles on April 2nd, 1949. Just incidentally, Ray Charles went on to record his finest live album in that same place many years later. The album was a stunner even for Tatum. In the liner notes, Leonard Feather said he was the greatest instrumentalist in jazz history, regardless of instrument. It's been in print for more than 50 years, but it was locked forever in the rough monaural sound of its time. Then John Walker and Zenf got a hold of it and Zenfied it up. They reproduced the entire album, brought Tatum back from the dead through the magic of their process, and they released the thing in a public performance at the Shrine Auditorium itself, in the very goddamn spot where Tatum had originally recorded it. They found, by the way, that it actually made a difference. If you moved it a couple of feet either way, it changed the sound. But they precisely reproduced Tatum's original concert on September 23rd, 2007, for the combined jazz critics of the nation, and just blew the doors off everybody. Because I got to know John Walker, made a point of looking him up after seeing him at Idea City and hearing his presentation. I got involved with him and became a friend of his, and I guess, I don't know whether it's full disclosure or what, but I'll be doing the liner notes for the Sony re-release of Art Tatum Live at the Shrine in Piano Starts Here, which should be coming out very, very shortly. You can hear samples by going to www.zenf.com. And now for something completely different. This next track isn't going to sound near as clean. It's a home recording, and please bear in mind it was recorded at home, something like 20 years ago. My guitar has been played by some interesting people in the past. Frank Zappa once played the thing for about 15 minutes, but that's another story. What I'm about to play you now is my guitar, Lady Macbeth, being played in my own living room in Halifax, Nova Scotia, in the morning, before coffee, by no less than the legendary Mr. Amos Garrett. Amos had been staying at my place for a week. Jeannie and I had put him up. He had drunk us out of house and home. He had spent the entire week telling incredible stories, each more fascinating and interesting than the last. You know that the movie documentary about riding the train high on cocaine with the Jefferson Airplane and the Grateful Dead and Janis all on the train? Amos was on that train. I mean, he can tell you stories about, you know, what George Harrison had to say to Jerry Garcia the night that Janis got pissed and like that. And it was a rollicking good time. But at the end of the week, we were all a little exhausted, and the last morning, before coffee, Amos said, Spider, you're taking real good care of me. Spider, you're taking real good care of me. What could I do to repay you for your kindness? That's about where Amos's voice starts, at the top of its register. I said, Amos, there's only one thing I want. Sit down in my living room. Let me turn on my TAC reel-to-reel and capture you playing just a couple of minutes of my favorite song in the world of yours, Lazy Bones. It was the first vocal Amos ever recorded on a Jeff and Maria Muldaur album. I can't play it for you because I don't have permission from Jeff and Maria, but what I'm going to hit you with right now is a version of it played by Amos Garrett in my living room live.
I'll bet you're praying that the bugs fall off the vine. They got good things to take care of the bugs these days, but I've just never seen a vine. And when you're fishing, I'll bet you're wishing that the bugs, that the fish don't bite your bugs. There's trouble along that line. Lazy bones. Sleeping all the day, how you gonna make a dime that way? Never make a dime that way. I'll bet you never heard a thing. Courtesy of Big Spider back on the coda of I'm Coming, Virginia. I wasn't too lazy to learn that one.
Now, in all fairness, it now behooves me, not dehooves me, that's what you do to obstreperous horses, it behooves me to play some of Amos Strait, Amos in the Studio. This is a track from the classic and recent Amos Garrett acoustic album called Perfume and Tobacco.
Now perfume and tobacco can be intoxicating when you stay up all night to greet the day. It's a kind of combination that defies imagination. Is it sweet or bittersweet? It's hard to say. It's like the strong sensation that defined our situation. Then like a puff of smoke, it blew away. Now that perfume and tobacco gone away when morning winds blow, but it's something I'll remember to this day. Drifting smoke green, like too much smoke, it takes my breath away. Now perfume and tobacco gone away when morning winds blow, but it's something I'll remember to this day.
Can play guitar and sing like that, it's easy to wonder how come he's not living in a castle in the south of France. The questions occurred to Amos, too. One of his better stories, I'll reproduce poorly here, is that he once attended a music industry conference, rather like a science fiction convention, and attended a panel of producers. Up there on stage were some of the most respected names in the business, and when it came time for the audience questions, someone stood up from the audience and addressed the most elderly, distinguished colonel whatever up there on the stage and said, sir, can you sum up in a single sentence what it takes to make a great producer? And the old guy said, well, yes I can indeed. That's very simple. Endeavor to place yourself between the talent and the money. Amos said he got up and walked out of there, understanding why he's not living in a castle in the south of France. Well, apparently a short time later, Amos is driving his pickup truck down the roads in Turner Valley, Alberta, and a teenage kid in a Porsche blows by him so fast his slipstream nearly knocks him off the road, and that's the last straw. Amos sits down and writes the following song called Hey Buddy. Lead vocals on this, Mr. Ron Kasat. It appears on the album The Cold Club. Amos formed a group in honor of the Hot Club of France called The Cold Club of Canada with a whole bunch of other accomplices and known unindicted co-conspirators. Here now is the X-rated version of Hey Buddy.
Hey Buddy, where'd you get the money? Hey Buddy, where'd you get the dough? You don't have to tell me how you got it. That's not what I really want to know. Drive a car that's worth $100,000. Hey, buddy, where'd you get the money? Tell me before I hit the big 5-0. I've been working all my life. Got a loving working wife. We drive a Chevy.
See that you
clear and free
in your Jag.
But when you pass me in your Jag with your Rolex yuppie bags, looking not a day past 23.
I had to ask you.
Hey, buddy, where'd you get the moolah? Hey, buddy, where'd you get the loot? Did you simply put it on your gold card? Or just whip out some cash stuff down your boot?
Your Gucci.
Hey, buddy, where'd you get that $100? Was it Wall Street, Mom and Dad, or selling
tea?
Where did you get the fucking help me solve this little mystery. Hey, buddy, where'd you get the do re mi fa? So where did you get the fucking do?
Well, having brightened your Christmas holidays with the fuck word, I may as well play you a song of my own, which features the most R-rated set of lyrics I've produced yet. A little bit of explanation for this. Jeannie and I were sitting around one night watching television. We were watching the TV show St. Elsewhere, a medical drama we used to like a lot. Briefly, the plot of the show was that one of the characters, a nurse, has a double mastectomy, whereupon her husband stops loving her and moves out. The show ends. Jeannie looks over at me. I look at her. I felt as though some sort of statement was called for. I don't remember exactly what I said, but the next day I sat down and wrote the following song. This is me again in my living room. That's also Lady Macbeth you'll be hearing. All guitars and vocals are me, I guess you'd have to say, playing with myself. This is a song called Hard on You, and a modified form of its lyrics appear in my novel Night of Power, available in better bookstores everywhere and crappy ones in selected cities. Here now is Hard on You, the most sincere love song I've ever written.
my constant horniness gets hard on you sometimes. It seems I'm always in the mood. If that is so, I truly beg your pardon too. It wasn't my intention to be rude. My love is like my horniness in that it never quits. But I'd love you if you didn't have those tears. Well, men have only got the one thing on their mind. Oh, man, it gets so repetitious. It's a crime all the time. Somebody said a hard man is good to find. Long as you don't find him every goddamn time. You are not only something that I lust for, that I hunt. I would love you if you didn't have a gun. Well, I'm neurotically erotic, with a taste for the exotic. And your body is hypnotic when it's next to me. I'm dementedly attentive and in need of small incentive. But you know, you represent much more than sex to me. You know that I was horny for you from the start. And that's the way it's always gonna be. You got to know your sexiness is just a part of the value that you'll always have for me. Well, it may have been what caught my eye, but it isn't why I stick. I would love you if I didn't have
it. Well, that should be just about enough obscenity for the Christmas season. Before I go, I want to rave about another podcast, www.starshipsofa.com. Now, I blushingly confess that for a podcaster, I don't listen to a lot of other people's podcasts. I just don't have enough friggin' time. But Tony Smith emailed me, asked me to do an interview for Starship Sofa, which I did. It's up there right now. And it led me to his site. And holy smoke, I'm glad I went there. This is a lesson to me. This guy's got me beat 7 ways from Sunday. His homepage dances with flash animations. And he's got a blog attached. And he's got video content. And he's got a extensive Michael Moorcock interviews I've been diving into. There's just all kind of stuff here. Check out www.starshipsofa.com. You're guaranteed a good time. One of the most interesting interviews I've ever had. And I'm very pleased with the results, and particularly pleased with this little panorama of images myself I'm looking at as we speak on the homepage. Alrighty now, let's see. Next week, I'm going to talk about what happens when non-science fiction writers step into the field and write science fiction novels, whether they get tagged for it or not. In both of the cases I'm going to discuss, they were very lucky they got away with it. They snuck in under the radar. Nobody realized they'd written science fiction novels. And so they both achieved huge critical success. I think one of them is, in fact, a great success as a read. One of the most exciting science fiction novels I've read in years. And I think the other is, for my money, a spectacular failure. We'll talk about that next week. We'll also give you a last-minute update just before Jeannie goes up in her zero-gravity plane from Las Vegas. As most of you know, on December 30th, Jeannie hopes to lift from Vegas in a modified 727 and fly parabolic arcs that will allow her and her dancer Kathleen McDonough to experience zero gravity for up to 30 seconds at a time, so they can work on the choreography for her planned IMAX movie, Stardance. You can find out more about that at stardancemovie.com. I'll say only quickly that this flight will be thanks to the insane generosity of the great Dr. Peter Diamandis. I'll be going on the trip, but I will not be going up in the plane with Jeannie unless something goes terribly wrong. The guy videoing the thing will be her director, James Spasto. I'll be providing ground support and also watching the Cirque du Soleil do the Beatles. But we'll give you a last-minute update just before we leave the ground next week. In this season of giving, I cannot close without at least a final word thanking you very much for all your kindness and generosity with your donations lately. I don't know whether it's the season or what, but you've all been very generous lately, Angie, and I greatly appreciate it. You've certainly brightened our holiday season. Amos's Hey Buddy song is as popular with science fiction writers as it is with musicians, and for the identical reason. We appreciate you helping rectify things just a bit. And now to take us out of here, here's one more track from Seth Augustus from his album To the Pouring Rain. There's a remake of one from his first album. It's called Convolution Blues. Take it, Seth.
And there's some space up in my time, and I feel so distant, so non-existent, so inconsistent. Got the convolution blues, convolution blues, convolution blues. I got them convolution blues, and they were winding around and turning me inside. Curses, I can no longer tell. The bluebird of happiness drowning in my wishing well. And I feel so tangled, so medley mangled, so jingle jangled. Got the convolution blues, convolution blues, convolution blues. I got them convolution blues, and
Episode 22 of Spider on the Web is being podcast under Creative Commons license, no derivatives, non-commercial, share alike. All copyright material remains protected. Be excellent to one another. Holly Hippie Days!